You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate today. With millions of Americans living longer each year, an increasing number of family members are taking on a new role, caregiver. The emotional, physical, and financial toll of caregiving is great, but so are the rewards. In 2010, journalist Nell Lake shared the experience of caregiving through a weekly meeting of a support group at a local hospital in western Massachusetts. There, she witnessed struggles and small victories, as well as the love, compassion, and heartache of everyday people caring for loved ones under difficult circumstances. Her new book, The Caregivers, a support group's stories of slow loss, courage, and love, argues for a more open conversation about end-of-life care. I'm pleased to welcome Nell Lake to our studio today, and some of you may have questions for Nell about caregiving. Maybe we have some caregivers who are going through some difficult times with their loved ones, and please feel free to contact us on our show page at WNYC.org or by calling us at 212-433-9692. Well, welcome, Nell. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you start the book with a story about your grandmother and how it spurred your interest in this topic. Could you tell us that story?
Sure. So my grandmother was a very vital, energetic person, very poised, lived a beautiful life. And she also talked a lot, quite a lot, about fearing illness, decline, what I call in the book the shadow part of life, a part of life that more and more people are going through as we live longer. And she particularly feared living in a nursing home. And one summer, she found out that she might have cancer. And a doctor told her she needed tests. But rather than take those tests, rather than schedule them, she that very night went to her garage and sat in her car and turned it on and committed suicide. And that really resonated for me as I followed people who were in that part of life that she had so kind of dramatically avoided.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think she had this particular, I mean, nobody wants to go through this, clearly, but why do you think her terror was so acute?
Oh, gosh, I think you can only chalk it up to a combination of personality, perhaps generational. You know, she was German. Perhaps there's a cultural piece in there, too.
She's a very strong, self-reliant person.
Very strong, independent. She really prized her independence. I think she really feared being dependent on anyone. And she also had a lot of distrust of the medical system, of losing control within the medical system.
Mm-hmm. And how did this experience, obviously a hugely traumatic experience in your life, but how did it lead you to sitting in on a weekly support group in a Massachusetts hospital? That seems like a very interesting direction to go in.
Well, it didn't lead me directly. Mm-hmm. The story itself, the opportunity to sit in on the support group, came along to me as a freelancer. I was at a dinner party and I met the facilitator of the group and we got to talking, and given my interest, so he worked at the community hospital as a counselor, the lead counselor on the behavioral health unit, and kind of on the side, he facilitated the support group. And we got to talking and he said, you might, given my interests, he thought I might be interested in sitting in on the group. So he got permission. And it was really once I was sitting in on the group that my grandmother's story really, started resonating with me more personally. And that was one way that I connected. So it got so engrossed in these people's stories.
How big was the group? How many people would participate in it on a weekly basis?
When I first started sitting in, it was only about six people, and that was already bigger than it had been before that. That was the beginning of 2010, and by the end of 2010, it had more than doubled, so that the conference table that they sat around was quite crowded, and they started having to think about what they were going to do if more people joined.
Mm-hmm. Now, you describe in the book the growing issue of caregiving in this country as we're getting more longevity in mm-hmm. the population, more people to take care for. How many caregivers do we have? I mean, if we have to estimate, how many caregivers are there, and who are they caring for?
Well, of course, caregiver, the word caregiver, family caregiver can apply to someone who's taking care of a disabled child or, you know, so I found a lot of different statistics, but one that seems to be used fairly consistently to describe family or friends who care for elderly family or friends is 43 million people in the United States care for someone over 50. Now, 50 is a little bit of a young marker, perhaps, for many of us, but I think it's probably they use that because it's the age at which some of these chronic illnesses start to kick in, like heart disease, diabetes, things like that.
Now, if you're a caregiver out there and you're listening to Nell and you want some, you have some questions or comments, feel free to give us a call to share your experience at 212-433-9692. So there are a great number of caregivers in the country. Do we have a ballpark number, people taking care of the elderly?
Yes, 43 million. And
43 million caregivers?
43 million caregivers, about 15 million of whom are caring for people with dementia.
Mm-hmm. And how have those numbers grown over, say, the past 50 years?
Well, what I can tell you off the top of my head is a little bit more about how the growth of the need for long-term care mm-hmm. has happened, and that is because our elderly population is growing so dramatically. So, for instance, between 2000 and 2030, the population of people over 65 is doubling.
Wow.
Yeah. And people are living longer because of medical advances, and they are not necessarily living more healthily. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're living longer and then, to put it crudely, dropping dead one day. We are living through long decline.
So the medicine, there's medicine to sort of tune us up and keep us going, but it doesn't necessarily make us youthful. It just sort of makes us sort of, we still have a heartbeat.
Yes. Many more people with cancer being managed by new treatments, many more people with heart disease also being managed, and of course this great growth of people with brain diseases such as dementia.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in for Leonard Lopate today at WNYC and WNYC.org, and I'm speaking to author Nell Lake. She has a new book, The Caregivers, a support group story of slow loss, courage, and love. And if you have calls, questions for Nell, or experiences as a caregiver, feel free to call 212-433-9692. I'm curious about this term slow loss. I had not heard that before. Is that your coinage, or is that something that's been around?
I'll be honest and say I don't. It occurred to me. I can't imagine I'm the first one to use it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see that particular way of referring to this experience. There are plenty of other ways that people have referred to it. In fact, the term ambiguous loss was created by a psychologist named Pauline Boss, who talks about the experience of someone disappearing and yet still being around, mm-hmm. if you see what I mean, in all kinds of different forms. But it certainly applies to long-term illness. And then someone in my book talked about slow grief, which is similar. So slow loss, by that I mean when someone you've known for a long time, someone you love, is in a long, slow decline. There's a reordering of your relationship with that person. There's slow loss of abilities, perhaps personality, in the case of dementia, a real loss of personhood in many ways. And so it's a kind of letting go of that person over sometimes years, even decades. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the most stressful things about this kind of caregiving, is that kind of prolonged loss, dissolution of what was before.
It's paradoxical in a way, because you would think that slow loss and slow grief would prepare you. It would be, incremental, and we're preparing you. And yet, it's kind of excruciating to see it happen. I went through this with my mom, who had dementia, and just by degrees, you'd lose a little bit more each day. And it doesn't sort of grease the skids for you emotionally at all. It's just kind of horrible.
Right.
Is that a lot of what people would talk about at the support group? Would people talk about their sense of, oh my God, this is what happened today. This is what she said or what he said. Or
oh, absolutely. I think the one way of summarizing what they talked about was exactly that, was slow loss and offering the latest in that process. You had Penny, whose mother lived with her, whose mother had vascular dementia, and Penny talked a lot about watching someone slowly lose everything they had, for instance. Or William, whose wife was in a nursing home and who endured, but who slowly also was losing, her personality, her speech. And yet they still had a relationship, which was one of the remarkable things that I discovered.
Well, we're getting a lot of calls because a lot of people are interested in this topic. So let's talk to Carol from Westfield, New Jersey. Carol?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Carol.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Yes, I took care of both my parents. They were hearing impaired, and my mom had dementia, Parkinson's, and they both came and lived with me and my daughter. I'm a widow, but it was a blessing to be able to take care of them in my home until they died at home as well. My father died 9 years later with congestive heart failure, but he was very spry and did a lot with his friends until he got older and got sicker. And it was hard to watch him slowly go downhill. That was very hard.
Yeah.
But it was a true blessing. And now I take care of an older gentleman in his home who doesn't want to leave. He's doing well, but he just needs somebody there, a companion, and I just cook for him Monday to Friday. And I've been doing this for a long time, and I just feel for the elderly. And there's so many out there, and every time I turn around, I see somebody walking or sitting alone eating or,
How did you find it a blessing? Can you talk
about that?
Yeah,
I was curious about that, too.
To be able to care for them in my home, just to have them with me. There was times when the window of opportunity was open for my mom with the dementia, and she would say something funny. And for 3 weeks, she was in the nursing home, first the hospital, then the nursing home for a surgery. And it was very hard to see her there, and she was very depressed. And when she came home, she really brightened up and, became a little bit more livelier. But then with the dementia, she slowly went downhill and died of pneumonia. But it was just special to have them at home and care for them there. And I've been taking care of the elderly for many years now on the side. I'm a secretary, my first job, but part-time I do elder care, and it is a blessing to be able to, be with them and just be a companion, be there for the families who need to get away for the weekend or overnight or something.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that, Carol. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You talk in your book about the small victories, and, she's talking about it was a blessing to be able to, and she has continued to take care of older people. What were some of the, I know it's a support group, so people are looking for support, but what were some of the victories that they would share in this group?
I think the biggest blessing that I witnessed, and that in a funny way I benefited from as well, was a kind of, which it sounds like the caller also experiences, is a kind of opening that you experience with responding to someone's needs, an opening of compassion and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of victories, I think, it was a matter of struggling with certain problems and then having those resolve in some way, whether it was, my mother, she's always asking me where I'm going, and I figured out a way for her to know that by putting up a sign on her walker every time I'm going out. And she learned that she could look there, and it reassured her. And so that was a kind thing to do, a compassionate thing to do. So it felt good, and it was also a small solution to these small problems that come up continually.
I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in for Leonard Lope today at WNYC and WNYC.org. And I'm talking to Nell Lake, who's written a fascinating new book called The Caregivers, a support group story of slow loss, courage, and love. It's all about taking care of the elderly, family members thrust into the role of caregivers. And we're getting a lot of good calls on this topic. So if you have any experiences to share or questions, you can call us at 212-433-9692. Let us hear from Marby in Hackerstown, New Jersey. Hi,
hello.
Marby. Hi, how
Hi.
Are you?
Oh, so glad that you were able to take my call. This is such a dear subject to my heart. I took care of my dad for the last 8 months of his life. He had cancer. He recuperated from cancer, but died as a result of an infection. Taking care of him was such a big blessing, and I praise for it all the time. Anyone that I tell them that was the best gift. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I get a little emotional still, even though it's already been 6 years. Taking care of him was one of the biggest blessings he could have given me. But now I have a similar problem with my husband. My husband had a brain injury, and now I care for him. Hmm. But I find that because I live with him in and out every day, it's a lot more difficult for me to have patience with him because he's younger. He's only 63. And he is so angry about everything that his whole world is gray. And trying to find on a daily basis a way to make his world a little brighter, it's difficult. And even though I consider myself a very patient person, I find that most people don't understand his injury or his personality. And as a result, we end up staying at home for the most part, not going out to meet with the family or other people. And when we go out on our own because I can still put up with his personality. But it's difficult to make other people put up with his personality and his comments and his gray world. Mm-hmm. Is there a support group where I can go and get more strength so that I can continue dealing with this? Declined a lot in the past 2 years, but I don't know what else to do. I don't want to send him to an institution. I don't want to send him, you know, to a care facility. I want him to stay with me till the end.
Well, first of all, Marby, that sounds like a really tough situation. So you have my sympathy, and it's great what you're doing. I think it's wonderful that you're doing it. It sounds really rough on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
Nell, what about a support group or some help for Marby? I actually got this comment also from somebody on our show page who was Georgina left a comment related. She said, there are support groups for just about everything, but I can't find an in-person support group for caregivers of elderly parents in New York. That seems shocking.
No kidding.
Shocking to me.
Oh my goodness.
We have such an aging population here. Every nursing home should have one. Everyone knows the caregivers need help. Why is it so hard to find? Would you know of any in New York City that might help? So it's a similar, I guess not on the tip of your tongue, but could you direct them to any research, to Marby
absolutely.
And Georgina?
I went to a mental health support group a while back, but the people there were very mentally ill.
Mm.
He's on the borderline of mental health and Alzheimer's type of help, where he just sits and looks down on the floor, and he has a gray world for the most part. And people don't understand this because when he gets together with other people, he just has very mean comments. But they don't come from a good place. It's just, mm-hmm. he's just angry at the fact that he's this way and that he doesn't see it getting better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, on a daily basis, understand that. So I try to compensate him in other ways. People think that this is their way of manipulating you or of using you. But when you've been with the same person for 35 years, you get to know their personality and know this is not them. This is something different.
Yeah.
But you get tired of explaining this to people because at the end of the day, they're going to walk out and go on about their lives. I'm the one that has to deal with this every day.
You know, it's even though it's a different source, it is so similar to what so many people who are caring for people with Alzheimer's deal with: personality changes, loss of inhibition, inappropriate comments, and the need to, and in social situations, the difficulty of coping with that. So I would, and maybe the other caller, writer-inner,
yeah.
the Alzheimer's Association, ALZ.org, definitely has links people with support groups, and I would be shocked that if there weren't one in New York City. Not being from New York, I don't know exactly which groups are out there, but you could start with that. If nothing else, perhaps be pointed in other directions. The AARP has a caregiving page. You could search AARP and caregiving, and that is likely to send you towards support groups. And also eldercare.gov is a, you can locate resources in your community by putting in your zip code. It will link you to area agencies on aging, which can then help you to find a support group for anyone who is searching for one.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Marby. We really appreciate your call. Bye-bye. All right, let's go to Helen in Queens. Helen?
Hi, thank you so much. It's a topic that really needs to be discussed. I took care of my mom who had a frontal lobe brain tumor, and that causes horrible personality changes. You watch them slowly fade away, and I so agree. They're there and they're not there. And they might have a good day and a good moment or put on a front for some of other family members, and they don't really know what you're going through. They'll say something like, oh, how about getting Aiden? She won't let anybody else but me in the door, you know? Or adult daycare when she's wandering at night or something like that, you know? They really don't get it, other family members, the people you think that you'd go to for support. So support groups are vital, and it gets very, very frustrating. At one point, I was just ready to call Adult Protective Services to just say, have someone come here and deal with it because I can't anymore. But luckily, you know, that didn't happen, and, you know, my mom passed. But now those relatives who were giving all sorts of well-meaning but frustrating comments are dealing with their elderly parents and seeing how tough it is, you know. And
there's
all of
no
a sudden,
escape from this.
You know, those little comments that they would toss off, and my mother would just say, I don't want to talk to them. They're going to tell me about their aches and pains, you know. they're feeling the effects. And, you know, I'm just there for them as much as I can, but it's like, yeah, see what it's like now when the shoe's on the other foot, you know, you can't put a Band-Aid on it.
Mm.
And it's that feeling of watching somebody who there's a flicker of that person you knew, and, you know, you want to be there for them, but that's the same person who installed all the buttons in you, where your teenage rebellion came out. They know just what to say to, you know, to get you upset. And you have to take a chill break. I once ran out saying I'm going to the post office, and I just called my therapist on a payphone, you know. It's like, because in the house she would wonder what I'm doing, if I'm on her phone, I'm talking too long, or, you know. It was kind of hysterical. Funny hysterical, because, you know, she had the only phone that was ready. I called them up so I could get touch tone, so I could retrieve my messages if I was at her home. The phone company couldn't even figure out how to do that, you know, never mind a computer or anything. So I can laugh about it now, but really, that's what you have to do, is find those sources of humor,
sure.
the people who can hear you for just what you're struggling with, and not make all those suggestions. Everybody thinks, you know, they know a lovely lady who'll come in a couple hours. Well, not if she doesn't open the door, you know, and all these other things. And you have to find ways to laugh with people who understand it, because otherwise, you know, the caregivers will be in the hospital. They'll have a stroke, a heart attack from the stress of it all. And I don't think that's looked at all, the health effects on the caregivers.
Thanks a lot, Helen. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your program. Thank you.
Thank you. And Helen makes a good point. You know, we have to give care to the caregivers, too. Like, they're going through a lot. So if you're a relative or a friend, don't, you know, don't be all bossy and critical of the job they're doing.
That's right. Well, a couple of things. One, there have been some studies that show the negative health effects of caregiving to caregivers' immune systems, that it causes earlier aging. And I think it's absolutely right that whatever kind of support one can find is really critical. And it's a particular kind of support also, without necessarily advice. the one thing about the support group that I followed, it was this wonderful space for sharing experiences and learning from each other's experiences, but without a whole lot of direct advice, perhaps suggestions for resources to find, but the primary benefit for people was to feel less alone, which is such a difficult part of caregiving, is that aloneness that so many of the callers have described.
Well, we're going to take one more call, and I think Jack may leave us on a slightly more upbeat note. So let's hear from Jack in Manhattan. Jack?
Well, the doctor given my mother 6 months, and she ended up going for 8 years because I think the care, he came out every year. He couldn't believe how she was doing. She really had very severe dementia, and I think when the first experiences that they have is they get very negative, and they want to be hostile, but I treated every negativity on her part, every no, every no, she got a kiss. 75 no's later, she turned and looked at me with her eyes and said, yeah.
Aww.
And I saw change in her. Her whole life had been such a difficult one, bitter from years of going through the pogroms and going through the war and going through revolution. And it was hard, but those last years of her life were golden. She literally smiled more in the last 8 years of her life than she had in the entire lifetime. She was happy.
Mm.
And that was the most beautiful thing, to see the transition. People came over, she smiled.
That's an incredible story, Jack.
And she understood everything, even though she couldn't speak. Her last words to me before she passed away, when she looked up in a very frail, such a delicate child. She was a baby. Diapered her and fed her. She was so beautiful. But her last words, she looked up and she says, I have everything, you know.
Mm. Oh, Jack, we can't go past that moment. That's got to be the last word on this topic. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate that story. And actually, a little bit of helpful information that Carol, a listener, left on our Facebook page. The New York City chapter of the Alzheimer's Association has many support groups for caregivers as well as for early stage patients, and she says it's a wonderful resource. So there you have it. And I promised you'd get to your bus on time, Mel. And I know that's been gnawing at you, but you're going to get there.
No, it's been great to be here.
It's been great having you. I've been speaking with journalist Nell Lake about her book, The Caregivers, A Support Group Stories of Slow Loss, Courage, and Love. It's published by Scribner. And Nell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.